Tom Weber on NPR News. Another big change in the offing now is net neutrality. You might have heard Chris Farrell talk about this last week on NPR News. This is an important topic, so we're revisiting it. Lots of questions, lots of opinions out there. The Federal Communications Commission will vote December 14th on whether to roll back so-called net neutrality protections that dictate how consumers can receive broadband internet. I'm joined now by Cecilia Kong, who covers technology for the New York Times. Cecilia, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Your questions for Cecilia, your thoughts on this pending vote, 1-800-242-2828. 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. We did put in a request to speak with the FCC chair, Ajit Pai. His agency declined. I'm wondering, Cecilia, if you've spoken with the chairman. Your phone calls might get returned a little more than Minnesota Public Radio. What are you hearing from him?
Well, the arguments that Ajit Pai's office and the office of the two other Republicans who will vote also to overturn these rules is that these rules are unnecessary, they are a burden on broadband internet service providers, and that by this action, which is to repeal net neutrality rules, this industry will flourish. That's what they're betting, and that's what they hope will happen. This is really a free market argument, and they feel like a lot of the arguments against their actions are maybe exaggerated.
There was a lot when this was debated in 2015. There was a lot of attention, especially on social media. I think some websites changed their front pages for a day. There was a lot of attention on this, and the rules became what they became. I don't feel the same level of that this time. Maybe I'm wrong, Cecilia, but is that a sense that this is going differently than when we did this 2 years ago?
Yeah, you know, I feel, Tom, like there is actually a lot of interest in this topic. The response has been pretty strong, definitely in my inbox, in terms of the readership of these types of stories. Social media, there is a lot of response. But the issue, the situation is different in that in 2015, the activism, if you will, against this, the public interest around this was about was for a Democratic head of the Federal Communications Commission in the Obama administration to strengthen rules. It was to create rules that were stronger than those who support rules had hoped they would be. So it was really moving them a little bit further towards a little bit further in an area that they already agreed where the rules should end up, which was the creation of broadband utility status and these no blocking and no pay prioritization rules. This time around, it's a little harder. What's happening is the FCC chairman, Ajit Pai, is proposing a complete dismantling of rules. It's much harder to stop it in some ways, to stop this particular action. There is still a lot of campaigns. The number of comments on the FCC website is into the 20 millions, about 23 million comments so far. There's some question as to whether all these comments are valid. It seems like many of them may not be. However, that is just a lot of interest compared to feedback from the public at other industries, other agencies like the EPA. So there is a lot of interest. It's just a different dynamic right now. This is a Republican administration and a White House that has proposed that they're a pillar of the administration is to dismantle rules, is to shed the government of regulations that are burdensome on businesses in their mind. And so this particular agency is following through on this. And so that's a very different dynamic than in 2015, where the question was, how strong should the rules be? Not whether there should be rules at all.
So does that leave you then with the sense that come hell or high water, this proposed change is going to pass, the die is cast?
Yeah, I think that's right. There are already 3 out of 5 commissioners at the Federal Communications Commission who say that they will vote to repeal net neutrality rules. So it's pretty much done, that particular action. But I will say, Tom, this issue has been around forever. this issue has been around. And what I mean by that is, the internet's young, and for about as long as the internet's been around, there has been talk about the control that internet service providers should have over content on the internet. And in 2010, there was discussion. 2006, there was discussion. So this is not, there's this, this particular issue's had lots of twists and turns. So even though on December 14th of this year, it's pretty sure, it's pretty clear that the FCC will vote to repeal the rules, that's not going to be the last step. What will likely happen is that there will be a court challenge. This net neutrality has been battled in courts also a few times now, and it could lead all the way to the Supreme Court. And there's a role for Congress to play as well. So definitely December 14th, 3 out of 5 commissioners will vote against the rules, to repeal the rules. But that won't be the last step.
Cecilia Kong covers technology for The New York Times. We're taking your questions as well as we talk about this. 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at WeberTom1. And please don't call or text if you're driving, especially on a day like today with now newly iced roads out there. So be careful out there. So what exactly is being repealed? What is the proposal, Cecilia?
Yes. The proposal would do away with rules that ensure that an internet service provider is a company like AT&T or Comcast that actually physically puts the pipe into your home that gives you access to the internet. And the rules say that those providers, those companies, cannot block websites. They cannot slow down the delivery of websites. They can't charge a website company like Mozilla, Etsy, Google, Netflix, more for fast delivery of those websites. What Ajit Pai, the chairman of the FCC, is proposing is that those rules go away, that they are scrapped. The other thing that he's doing is symbolically quite important and in practice quite important, is that he is repealing a classification of broadband internet. And this is really wonky, but it's really important. What the FCC chairman in the previous administration did was he classified broadband internet as a common carrier service. That put broadband in a category that opened it up to much more regulation. And the idea behind that is that the former chairman of the FCC had said, broadband has become so essential to our lives, it's almost like a utility. So it should be regulated as like a utility. And that made the broadband industry go crazy. And it made a lot of conservatives who are much more inclined to freer market principles very frustrated, because they thought that was an overreach by the government to do that, because broadband is still a growing industry. And those are internet service providers in the minds of Republicans and the minds of the companies, of course, felt like their industry did not deserve to be regulated like a phone.
What happens then? So I sit at home with my wireless, and honestly, there are times when it seems slow to me, right? I can't load the Netflix movie or something like that. So I have my moments of up and down with my own carrier, and we've all seen people complaining about their ISP.
Oh, yes.
How will my daily experience change once this rule is changed?
Well, I would say, first of all, I don't think the changes are going to come right away. I think these internet service providers, knowing that this has become such a hot button issue, will be very reluctant to make some big drastic changes to their business models right away. What could happen, and this is why this issue is kind of tricky, is that there's a lot of prognostication, a lot of hypothetical prognostication of what could happen down the road. It's hard to say exactly what these service providers will do, but in the future, what the carriers, the internet service providers, the wireless service providers, and the cable companies that give you broadband, what they could decide to do is to create different kinds of tiers of service and say, hey, you know, customer, if you pay $5 more, you're going to get much faster Netflix delivery, which means that you'll never have to suffer through buffering. That would perhaps be at the expense of Hulu or YouTube. Those are the kinds of things that might change. Already we're seeing some indications of how the market is changing and sort of bleeding into this world with no net neutrality. right now AT&T, for example, and T-Mobile offer free delivery of certain websites, like for AT&T, that's DirecTV, anything in their DirecTV streaming business. For T-Mobile, it's any company that signed up with them, like YouTube or Netflix, to get free streaming of their services that don't count against, so in other words, that don't count against data caps. It's complicated stuff, but this all means big business for the internet service providers. And I will say that when it comes to that T-Mobile business plan that I described, mm-hmm. consumers actually quite like it. So there may be some offerings that you really will like and appreciate. The question, and I think that the theoretical and the philosophical question behind this is, should the internet service providers have the ability to control that mm-hmm. what is delivered to the consumer? Should there not be a level playing field is the question.
And so the utility argument that was made in the last administration was that we don't allow, for example, the electric company to decide, I don't know, I don't even know what the comparison would be, but they can't send electricity, you know, faster to my air conditioner than they can to my lights or something like that. I don't even know if I can come up with the analogy there, Cecilia.
Yeah, it's hard to come up with that. Yeah, and I think the utility, the decision to classify this as a common carrier or like a utility was a very legal decision in the sense that this net neutrality had been overturned in courts, and they needed a rock solid foundation for why they were creating net neutrality rules. And so they used the utility classification as the underpinning of it. I know it's so wonky, but it was really significant at the time. But symbolically, it was really important because it was a government saying, we think that this is a super important service for the economy, and we feel like we as the government should have a stronger role in ensuring that consumers are protected, the consumers of the service.
So I don't know if you've seen this. One of the things I've seen on social media is a chart that I think people say is from Portugal, where they don't have net neutrality, and it's this code or this chart of how much your internet service will pay, and it's 5 extra euro if you want to have faster Netflix, and it's 10 extra euro if you want HBO, and whatever the websites are. I don't know if you've seen that chart or charts like that.
I have seen it.
Is that what's coming?
Well, I think that's one of the hypotheticals. I think the clearest it's a compelling idea in that a lot of the companies that provide internet service are also cable companies, and the cable industry has created models, packages, bundles that look like that chart coming out of Portugal. It's tiered service. It's the idea that, okay, you're going to pay $5 more for HBO. You're going to have to pay for the sports package. You know, you're going to have to do all these different things. And so it's a compelling idea in that there's a model that already exists for television entertainment and the distribution of television entertainment that is based on all kinds of pricing tiers, and those pricing tiers are determined by licensing agreements between the cable distributor and the networks and the cable content companies. And the question is whether that sort of model will transfer to the internet, because in some ways the dynamics are similar. You have the companies that create content on the internet and the companies that distribute the content on the internet. So I think those who talk about this model in Portugal and other places that are a cable-like model for the internet are simply using something that already exists and pointing to that as an indication of the future.
I mean, it made me think of how when I get cable, I can get the package that has ESPN or I can get the package that doesn't, right? And that depends on how much I pay per month.
Right. That depends on how much you pay per month. And then there are also times when you're forced to just buy a big package
of all the stupid channels that I'm never going to watch. Right. We're talking to Cecilia Kong here from the New York Times, who covers technology. We're taking your questions as well about net neutrality, 1-800-242-2828. Let's go to Chris, who's in Minneapolis. Hi, Chris. What do you want to know here today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about removing kind of the accountability from these media and cable companies. I grew up on through the Ma Bells and the breakups and so on, and we kind of I have struggling to see that they can be trusted, especially with the, like, we've given them basically $2 billion, as I've seen reported, for infrastructure and the fiber, and we don't see that. So if we're removing regulations and kind of going to trust them, is there any accountability if these regulations are removed? Any kind of like, okay, we trusted you, and now you split everything up, and we as consumers don't like this. What is our path to hold them accountable to the things that they're telling us are going to be, don't worry about it, this will be good for the consumer?
Thanks, Chris. Cecilia?
Under this proposal, and it's a great question, under this proposal, the watchdog role that the FCC plays for the internet service providers will actually shift to the Federal Trade Commission. Now, the Federal Trade Commission is one of the agencies that protects consumers. They have a consumer protection mandate, though they deal with lots of different issues. So there is a sort of leap of faith, like the caller is saying, saying that that we believe that the internet service providers have it in their interest to provide as much content as possible to not violate on principle net neutrality. The one thing that that is preserved in the rules is a transparency clause. That means that if you, an internet service provider, decide that you want to block certain websites or throttle certain websites, you have to disclose it somehow. But there's so much ambiguity around that particular clause that will be retained that it's unclear how they're going to present the internet service providers will describe that to their consumers, if it's going to be in letters of websites, if it's going to be clear, if it's going to be one of those multi page terms of services agreements that nobody reads. But it's the watchdog role is an important one. So generally, the FCC is arguing that the FTC is a robust enforcement agency that's able to police bad behavior. Though I will say the FTC will be, it's unclear under what sort of mandates or legal principles they would enforce net neutrality because the FCC is getting rid of the rules itself.
So they're saying, don't worry about all your concerns. The FTC will take care of it. But critics would point out, well, yeah, but you're not giving them any rule books to follow.
Exactly. Just a general consumer protection rule.
Cecilia Kong with us from the New York Times. And Cecilia, I have this comment here from Twitter. Free market. How much free market is there in monopoly or near monopoly? How much more are we going to have to pay Comcast to stream my Netflix, HBO, and Amazon Prime? And then Mark says, well, how quickly will this be overturned when the Dems get back into control? Is it possible this is just kind of a parlor game because it'll ping pong back and forth between if there's a different administration in a few years?
Two great comments. The first one is really central. The first idea that competition is at the heart of the rules is something that I think needs to be explored, especially out there, you know, in Minnesota. You see, in rural areas especially, there's not a lot of competition.
Right.
There's not even a lot of availability, right? So the fact of the matter is most Americans have access to one or two providers of broadband to the home. And so the idea of thinking that the federal government can allow the internet service providers to run their businesses without regulation and to trust them to make the right choices is a difficult pill to swallow for consumers, because consumers would like to see more options. So, you know, if you are stuck with a service that looks like what we described earlier, Tom, like that Portugal model, the chances are that if you live in the United States, you don't have a lot of alternatives. So I think that's a really important question and a really important aspect of this. The FCC, currently led by Republicans, three Republicans and two Dems, would say that wireless providers have become more competitive to the broadband service providers to your home. They don't offer the kind of speeds, for sure, that the cable and telco providers bring to your home. But the FCC currently really believes that that's growing, that the wireless industry is growing into a much more competitive business to those telco and cable providers. The second point, I think, is really an important thing. Net neutrality, we could be talking about this in 2020, 2024, really, and I wouldn't be surprised. It has surprised me how long this has lasted. And the reason why is that the agency itself depending on who's in charge and depending on the administration, of course, will determine how they feel about these rules. The only thing that could really put a stop to this or to really set into concrete either rules or no rules is a decision by Congress, legislation. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of pressure on Congress to come up with some sort of legislation. I think anybody who's watched any of the different fights right now on health care taxes or what have you would see that this will be very, very difficult to achieve. And there's not a lot of interest among legislators to take this up from what we see so far. So what we'll probably see is the day after even, this day after December 14th when the vote occurs, or soon thereafter, you're going to see small companies, internet companies, or big internet companies, and especially consumer advocacy groups announce that they will challenge this FCC decision in court. They're going to take this to an appeals court. And that will be the first step. As to whether that heads to the Supreme Court or not is to be determined. But there are various scenarios on where this can go next.
There are still people, millions of people, and this will surprise people to hear this, but there are still people, including in Minnesota, who use dial-up to get their internet. Yeah. Are they affected by this because that goes through the phone line? I mean, is it different at all, or is dial-up going to be affected as well?
They won't be affected because dial-up is not considered broadband, but they will in an indirect way. And that's what I mean by that is I think that there's already a very fertile discussion policy-wise on how to bring more competition to the market and especially how to extend broadband to areas that are underserved or unserved at all right now, those who have just dial-up. So the definition of high-speed internet is 25 megabit downloads speeds, and so dial-up does not count as broadband. But it affects areas. It's a digital divide issue in the sense that there is more control and more power in the hands of the bigger telco and cable companies, and whether there's an incentive for them to continue to extend their networks into rural areas is a big question. And when they have more power, I think everybody who's in a rural area is just going to watch and see whether they would be willing to extend their broadband into those areas. So far, they have not. They don't see the return. They don't see the business case for bringing broadband to hard-to-reach areas.
You know, one of the things the state of Minnesota does is it puts up state money for capital projects to expand broadband. Is there a role for the states here? Could the states now, if this rule passes, come back and say, yeah, we'll give you money to expand broadband, but the broadband in that area, because it was paid for with taxpayer money, has to be net neutral. Is that an option?
Another thing that the FCC is proposing is to preempt states from creating net neutrality rules.
Okay, well, that answers that question.
That answers your question, and that's a new thing and an important thing. But what you're describing, Tom, is really intriguing. That could be a clause in a contract. It could be a one-on-one contract. It doesn't necessarily have to be a state law. What the FCC is proposing is that no states or cities can create their own regulations on net neutrality. That the federal government's determination on net neutrality will preempt broad-based laws, proposals for laws.
But when they sign on the dotted line that contract to give you all that money to expand to this town or that town, that specific contract, maybe it could have that language.
It's, you know, as you're describing it, it makes a lot of sense. And I don't think that from what I've heard of the state preemption clause in the FCC proposal, I don't know if that could prevent something like that happening.
That sounds like your next column there, Cecilia.
Good idea.
Gabriel in Minneapolis, you're on the phone here. What's your question?
Hi, Tom. My question is, if net neutrality rules are repealed, will it create an environment for internet service providers to censor news websites or news media organizations, or for government officials to influence service providers to censor news that is, you know, they are opposed to?
Thanks so much. Cecilia?
So free speech is a big part of the debate here. And the internet service providers, all of the big ones and their trade groups, have all said there's no way we're going to block any sites. There's no incentive for us to do that. And there's certainly no incentive for us to stifle speech. But again, this is a that's them volunteering that they will continue to follow principles of net neutrality. But that is a big fear, you know. And I think more realistically, what could happen is that certain websites that certain media websites can have more prominence. So say if you're, and remember now, all these internet service providers, they're all merging with content companies. So AT&T, as we know, is trying to merge right now with Turner, with Time Warner, which owns CNN and other media properties. So you can imagine a scenario where AT&T just makes it easier for consumers to find CNN. So those who might want an alternative point of view in news, if you think that CNN has a point of view, might find it a little bit harder to find that other website or the other streaming service. So that's how I think things will that speech could be affected. What, the outright blocking of sites is going to be much harder. I think consumers would be up in arms.
But what about the Nazi websites? What about even people who would say that Breitbart peddles anti-Semitism and peddles all this racism and hate speech? What about those being blocked?
You know, it's a question for the internet service providers. I mean, we have seen the companies that host these websites, like Cloudflare, decide not to host the Daily Stormer, for example, a Nazi website, saying that we just don't, you know, we don't care about, the arguments around this. This is just bad for society. We decide to block it. And they actually got a lot of pushback from free speech advocates saying that we may not like what the Daily Stormer supports, but we are our spouses, but we don't believe that any websites can be blocked. It's a really intriguing argument on the principles and the practicalities of these, you know, these decisions. The websites themselves, if they were to be blocked, would probably cause a stink, and consumers would probably protest. But again, this goes back, Tom, to the question of, well, even if you as a consumer don't like what your internet service provider is doing, what are your options?
Right.
In many cases, not many options.
Katrina in Minneapolis, what's your question here today for Cecilia?
Thanks for taking my call. I kind of have a two-part question. One being, do you have any idea how this might impact students? Like, will I see a hike in my student services fee because my school has to pay for speeds? And then two, what's the best way that I as an individual can defend net neutrality, especially with kind of an unresponsive state rep? Thanks.
Thanks so much, Katrina. And I think she meant U.S. rep. I think the bigger spirit of her question there was, if the die is cast, what's the point of me sending in a contact?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a position on either side, but there are lots of groups out there that have lots of plans for the next 2 weeks to try to raise attention to the issue. So, you know, they're very easy to find online. And I would also say, as far as your student prices go, it's hard to say. You know, what one thing that happened is a lot of the effects of net neutrality, I don't think will be seen right away. It's more down the road. What will your internet service bill look like in a couple years or in a few years, maybe even sooner? It's hard to say. A lot of these... If your internet service provider is going to charge websites more, the websites themselves might also trickle down costs. You know, maybe, and I'm just this hypothetical, but maybe Amazon, if they're being charged a lot, would decide, okay, well, free shipping is really hard for us now because we have these other costs. Those are the kinds of scenarios that are being, you know, raised as possibilities in the future.
Final question here. The city of Minneapolis here has its own ISP. It is a municipal wireless service. Are they affected, or do they also get to get in this game and raise a bunch of money by doing the non-net neutrality rules?
I think that they're in the game. Municipal broadband providers are broadband providers, just in the same category. So they are currently categorized as common carriers. They have net neutrality rules like any other internet service provider. So it's up to them on how they want to treat their customers and how they want to manage traffic on their networks.
So we could see some interesting city council meetings as well as they debate that as well. That's very interesting.
That's my other column, Tom.
There it is. I'm glad to give you all this good content here, Cecilia Kong. Good reporting, which is why we wanted to have you on the show too. Thanks so much for the insight and for all the information. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Cecilia Kong covers technology for the New York Times. Head to nprnews.org for more.